The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Okay, Woolley is not here, but he's left us a cracking interview with Jack O'Connor, which is coming up on the show very shortly. It's me and Connor to hold the fort for now, and we're going to get straight into free kick shootouts, because, Jesus, there was some drama on Thursday night about this. I was watching it myself. So, like, Antrim, in fairness to them, did an amazing job. They were live streaming the free kick shootout, and, like, for the most part, like, people think it's very harsh to lose a game on free kicks, and same way you think it's harsh to go out of a World Cup on penalties, but, like, you know, surely it has to be sorted in some capacity. And actually, before the free kick shootout, when Antrim announced that it was going to be a shootout, everybody just started replying to their Twitter account saying, go live, go live, go live. And they went straight on the Periscope, and there were 3,500 people watching it. And I watched the whole thing. There was 10 free kicks each. And this is before Kieran McAvaney stepped in, the chairman, the county chairman, stepped in and called a halt to it, which... He's getting a lot of credit for it. So basically, I'm sort of shitting on here. The game is the county semi-final, the football semi-final between Lough Yarrig, or Lam Derg, as they say, in Belfast, and Pádraig Lánoin. Went to extra time. This is already a replay, so they had played before, drew the game, played the replay, drew the game again. This was in the Dub in Queens in Belfast. Went to extra time, couldn't be separated, so... At about 10 o'clock, 10:30, they had to start the free kick shootout. But then, like, 10 free kicks in for each team, and Kieran McAvaney stepped in and said, enough's enough. Now, what they did do wrong, Connor, I thought, and this is something that the GAA can learn from going forward, like, you used to have the free kicks from the 45, which was ridiculous, because not everybody can do that. Like, the idea of a penalty shootout, the drama of it is that, you know, you should score, really. Like, that's why you tune in, because somebody's going to bottle it. Like, that's the whole entertainment value of it. So they brought the free kicks are around the D again. That's in the middle of the goals, if you want. So you should really score, but you can miss as well if you shank it. But what they did very badly here was you just had to pick five kickers, and then they got to hit them again. So after the first five of Pádraig Lánoin's, they were back to their best five again. So if you have your best five kickers are going to score most of them. Like, you know, the real beauty of it is when it's getting down to the cornerback or the keeper or somebody who doesn't want to hit a free, you know, stepping up. Like, that should be the way it's done.
As harsh as it is on the cornerback, it might be as accomplished in front of goal as a free taker. But I agree that's the whole point of, let's say, penalty shootouts in the first place, that it eventually goes through the entire team or the entire squad and somebody's going to miss, and it just so happens that it's going to be the guy who's not as accomplished in front of goal that's going to be the fall guy in the end. But just to say, like, the only time I've ever put something on Periscope in my life is I was actually at, and I think this it could have been the first ever inter-county penalty shootout, but I was at the FPD game between Mayo and Leitrim.
Oh, yeah.
Way back in January, down in Park, John McDermott.
Was that the first shootout, if I'm right?
I could be wrong, but I think it was definitely the first this season. Mayo were in another one with Galway, but I remember at the time, nobody in the crowd was, even though the rule had been brought in, nobody in the crowd was actually sure what was going to happen. And then it was announced over the PA system that it was going to be penalty. So everybody, all the kids, ran down from the stand to behind the goal. Everybody, including myself, in the stand got it on, started filming it and getting on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. So just to speak to the levels of excitement that it does create, it's incredible. And like I myself, when I saw, so obviously there was a lot of kind of commotion around Twitter on Thursday night, and I tuned in. I think by the time I tuned in, they were cancelling the free kick, so I missed out on it. But obviously an FPD, maybe, you know, the first round of the FPD doesn't have the same kind of implications, let's say, for the teams involved as the situation in Antrim did last night. But maybe we'll get to it. But my thing was that why step in after 10, as opposed to not stepping in at the start? I mean, if you're gonna do it, you're gonna do it, and then the decision to you know, you have to take that decision. You don't let the free kicks take place in the first place, as opposed to deciding after 10 of them that no, I'm going to put a stop to this. And I can understand why the chairman was getting credit for me, because a lot of people would be of the sentiment that, you know, that shouldn't be the way that the game is decided. But that's neither here nor there. You either decide that you're going to go ahead, or you decide that you're not. So, like, what happens tonight? You know, I think it's on again tonight.
Yeah.
What happens tonight if it's a draw again after extra time? I'm sure they have a contingency plan in place, but it'd be really interesting to see.
Yeah. What happens when an intermediate team goes out on a free kick shootout and then, like, they can just cite the county chairman or his quotes, who said no team deserves to lose that way? Like, you know, he's really sort of made a rod for his own back here. It's dangerous stuff, and you're bang on. Like, it. Like, he's arbitrarily decided, like, you know, like 10 kicks is enough. Like, if somebody had missed the 8th kick or the 9th kick, the game was over and it would have been decided that way. He's decided that 10:36 p.m. is too late, but 10:35 p.m. isn't too late. And this is an argument they always have with Woolley sometimes, you know, when we talk about, like, rule changes and stuff. Like, you can't have any room for, like, grey areas. They have to be black and white. Like, and this is, like, I remember, you know, we were talking about this one where the forwards had to stay inside the 45, and I was sort of like,
I remember that.
I was being cheeky enough, just like, what happens if there's a ball 5 meters away? And Woolley was like, "Ah, the referee can decide." And it's like, "Well, but what's the rule? Like, what is the rule?" Like, and it's the same with this: is it a free kick shootout or not? Like, you know, and you know, even if you want to put into the rules, a game has to be ended by 10:30 p.m. Then, you know, then you're sort of covering yourself in that way. But I didn't like, you know, because he was talking about no team deserves it. He said, we're going on about mental health a lot in the world now, and this is the GAA bringing that to fruition as well. Just like, I don't know, they were just loose enough quotes, and as big a credit as Antrim get for the coverage that they're giving the club championship, I just thought that was one man sort of going on his own sort of solo run, and, like, you know, without sort of consulting with everybody else. Like, you take Carrigan thought they were in a final now this weekend. But no, that got pushed back a whole week because of the
extra time and the free kicks.
Yeah,
being suspended on the Thursday night. Yeah,
and now we're having an extra game, so now Carrigan can play. And, you know, so the whole thing's pushed back. And, you know, people might have had plans around that, but because of the solo run, and, like, you know, because, like, yeah, he's getting a lot of well wishes and well done and whatever else. But, like, Jesus, this has to be a bit more official, I think.
Yeah, like in his defense, I think he just took the decision kind of in the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
And, like, his intentions, he was, you know, I'm not going to doubt his intentions. They were entirely honorable. He did it for the sake of the players, for the sake of the clubs. Because you can imagine, like, whatever club lost out, there definitely would have been a prevailing sentiment afterwards to say that shouldn't happen. You know, even though it was in the rules, and even though the free kicks were allowed to take place, you would have had somebody on Friday. You would have had a collection of people, I would say, on Friday saying no club should go out in that manner. So that's what was foremost in his head. But, like, if when you kind of get down to the nitty gritty, I mean, you kind of take sentiment out of the way, you know, it's the arbitrary nature of deciding to step in after 10. And then, like, I think we're probably going to talk about club fixtures again and rescheduling of club fixtures again. But it had an implication on Carrigan, as you said, and could have an implication on the two clubs involved tonight as well. So that's, like, I get why he was getting the credit, because, like, you know, it took balls, let's say, to step in. Like, it was really traumatic, you know, the way he walked up to the
player
to get the referee in. But, you know, it really was, and I can imagine what it looked like, because you had a full house there. So just the drama of it all was amazing. But just, as I said, when you take sentiment out of it all, I'm not sure if I go along with the decision.
He does seem like a good man, fairness, and a good county man.
Yeah,
but, that stuff just needs to be... needs to be a bit more formal, but
just to say though, just, I think it's on at 8 o'clock tonight. I think that Man United Arsenal is on at 8 o'clock tonight, but there'll be a lot of competition for future, because that was unbelievable last week.
But point
by Paddy Cunningham as well was good as you'll see as well. Stephen O'Neill, I think.
We'll talk about that in performance of the weekend, because that was just filthy stuff. It's exactly what coaches don't want you doing, and, like, you know, that's just two fingers up to people who tell you to recycle it. But yeah, like, and you touched on it there. Like, So 3,500 people are watching this, like a championship football game, in a club championship football game in Antrim. Like, put that into context, there's more people watching that on Twitter than there were watching the All-Ireland football final on Sky. Do you know,
that's
like,
crazy, yeah, I thought that, yeah.
And this is sort of my argument then for free kick shootout. It's like, it just adds to the drama of it. Like,
yeah.
And yes, like, you know, it's not nice to lose. And you hear this in soccer all the time. Like, you know, nobody deserves to go out in penalty shootout. But as you say, you have to decide it some way. And there's no nice way to lose anyway. Like, you know, last minute free.
Exactly.
It's just as bad as losing a free kick shootout. And for a neutral, like, the stats prove it. Like, if more people hadn't known this, imagine this was a Sunday night, it was Thursday night, and like, it just happened out of nowhere. If people hadn't known it, there was a chance of this going to a free kick shootout beforehand, there would be more than 3,500 people watching it live. There's more to watch this since.
Yeah. How many people tune into crap games of football?
Yeah.
Once, you know, maybe 10 minutes into extra time, once they realise that there's a, like, the, even the mere prospect of it going to penalty.
Yeah.
And like you know, supporters of the teams involved, and obviously the players involved, you have sympathy for them. But like, those same players, if they know that two other clubs are involved in a free kick shootout 2 weeks later, I can guarantee they'd be tuning into it on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, there will be some victims on that, like, in this. But like, you have to remember that, like, no matter how, a game has to end sometime. You know, whether it's after replays or when you play extra periods of extra time. And at that stage, because at this stage you're talking about it, especially in you know, club football, where there's probably been a replay already, it's gone to the point where it's going to be a cruel way to end the game, no matter, you know, no matter how you end the game,
yeah.
I suppose. So if there's an element that kind of appeals to you know, gets more spectators and stuff like that, you know, like, well, I know I'd be all for it while having sympathy for the people involved as well.
Yeah, but just being delighted that you're not part of it and kicking back.
Yeah, pretty much.
back in Galway, so we're talking about Galway a lot in this off-season, but they're on the road now to deciding a new senior football manager. So four nominees have been put forward. Pádraic Joyce, no surprise, has been one of them. Galway legend, obviously under-20 manager this year. Joining him, three interesting names. So Liam Cairns is one of the nominees, obviously outgoing from Tipperary. And Liam Cairns is not something to be sniffed at. So, like,
no.
Laois, Tipperary, Limerick. Now, he took Limerick to two Munster finals. Obviously, he took Tipperary to the All-Ireland semi-final. Got a couple of promotions with them. He was also manager of Aherlow in Tipperary club scene in 2010 and won the championship with them. Anybody that's sort of is able to break up the commercial juggernaut is doing a good job there. So, like, he's got credentials. A lot of players speak highly of him, including our own Woolley, who had him at Laois. And it's an interesting name they pop in there. Matt Duggan, the Galway junior manager. actually, I thought, like, this might rouse some emotion amongst Galway fans, because I just saw one of their results there in the semi-final back in, was it July this year? They beat Meath 7-17 to 5-22. You know, so that would be a complete departure from the Kevin Walsh era. They lost two finals, the Galway juniors, two finals in a row to Kerry, obviously. And the last one, Alan Flynn, 40-year-old from Tuam. He was the Galway under-21 manager in 2013 when he was just 33, and he won the All-Ireland with them. When he was just 26, he took Cathair le Strann in 2005, coached him to the Galway and Connacht Intermediate titles, got the All-Ireland final as well. And he was in with Cian O'Neill at Kildare this year. So he's got big pedigree. He's been coaching for a long time. And some people, they just are sort of born coaches, right?
Mm. Yeah, completely. I don't know a whole lot about Alan Flynn, but you mentioned Duggan, the junior manager there. My kind of exposure to him would be limited to what I've seen. There's a few lads from my club involved with the Mayo junior side.
Yeah.
So I've seen them against Galway the last couple of years as well. And I thought the Mayo team was quite strong, but they didn't look like beating Galway either this year or last year. They're really impressive. Against Mayo, it was 2017, I think, and it was before the senior game, and wasn't a hiding, but like they probably shouldn't beat them by more than they actually did. And you said losing to Kerry in the two finals as well, because like I've seen Mayo teams getting hammered by Kerry because they treat their junior side differently. You know, it's kind of used as a developmental panel
yeah.
to the senior team, so they tend to be particularly strong. So he's got some good credentials there. And then just on Liam Cairns, he's got his track record, as you mentioned there, would be brilliant. I think this is a step up. This is a level up from. So I suppose he went from, when he had Limerick, they were quite strong, actually. But then Laois and Tip like along kind of similar lines, especially when he got tipped to the semi-final. But I think Galway would be the biggest job yet. And I suppose my only thing on that is, I think I remember saying last week that I think he had come to the end of the road with Tipperary. I think they needed a fresh fight. That's not to say that was his fault. As I said last week, sometimes things just come to a natural end. But I just think that the competition against him, and because a lot of it is homegrown, might go against him. And just not because of that meeting that I bore witness to last week that I'm not going to bring up again. But I just feel there's kind of a momentum building behind Pádraig Joyce. Like he really good brand of football with a really good under 20 team, and just obviously his legendary status from within the county, and just kind of following him, you know, kind of from afar. He's done a lot of kind of AIB columns and stuff, and he's kind of been intimating that his approach would be different to what Kevin Welsh has done in years, which in recent years, which I imagine would kind of lend an appeal to the traditionalists in Galway as well. So obviously nothing set in stone yet, but I say that the smart money is on Joyce at this stage.
Yeah, I'm doing a bit of reading. Obviously Joyce probably is the clear front runner, and I think he will get it, but I was interested in this Alan Flynn fella. I decided to go all in on him, and I found out he's an operations manager as well. And I thought, geez, that's exactly what you need to be when you're a manager. Like, you know, when you're a coach, I think for me, and just in my personal and professional life, it's always like, you know, don't worry, it'll all fall into place. Like, but somebody like that, when you're managing a county setup, you need to be as organized and as clever.
Or you need to have an operations manager if you're not one yourself.
Exactly. So, yeah. But even the fact that they'd be thinking that way, and like, you know, Kevin McStay has always been very good at talking about the struggle for managers, like the amount of money they have to raise and all the you know, all the travel and everything they need to organise outside of just being able to coach a bloody football team. So somebody like that who is doing it every day, like, you know, I think it really would sort of stand to them. Now, maybe there's a potential that he could, because he's been a coach, he was coaching Kildare this year, maybe. You know, maybe Pádraig Joyce could bring him in under his wing as well.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. And he's still young. You said he was what, 20? He was in his 20s.
Yeah, he's 39 or 40 now,
So he's still, like, I suppose he still has time to build his kind of his coaching credentials. And potentially, you never know, as part of a management team involving some of the people that are there already. But I know, I'm just thinking back, because when you mentioned operations as well, I'm thinking of Davy Fitz is another man that's really good at that. You know, especially when managing the stuff, that the external stuff that not everybody thinks of, and particularly when it comes to fundraising within a county. But when I mentioned Davy Fitz, I just remember that I'm not going to make any predictions about Galway football, because I predicted Davy Fitz would take the Galway job last week, and within hours he committed to Wexford. So.
I think it's the one prediction I got right on the GA.
Take my word as nothing anyway.
Yeah, well, fixtures. You said we'll probably talk about fixtures this year, and here we go again. So back in Carlow, this is the same sort of thing that happened with the Camogie and Ladies football in Coola in Dublin. It's happening now with the football and hurling in Carlow. So Ballinkillen's senior hurling team were kicked out of the championship. That's a report from Carlow Lives, and they were kicked out after a dispute arose over the scheduling of the club semi-final. So they said that they could not fulfil their Sunday fixture because they had a game on the Saturday as well. Carlow Live understands that the county board have now awarded the match to Niamh Mullins. So they were supposed to be in the hurling game on Sunday, and they had a football game on Saturday. This thing's happening all over. Like, this is the problem for dual players and dual clubs. They did release a statement, so they said, last Sunday, the club learned via social media that the intermediate football semi-final between Kildavin, which would be their football team, and Niamh Owen had been scheduled for the preceding Saturday evening, 6 p.m. So a game on Saturday evening, 6 p.m. On confirming this report, we immediately contacted the county board with a request that either of these fixtures, the one on a Sunday or the Saturday, be rescheduled. There are 5 Ballinkillen hurlers involved with the Kildavin panel, and the club took the view that to ask players to play 2 important matches within 18 hours of one another was unjust, against player welfare and against the player development pathway. We have therefore informed the county board that we cannot fulfil Sunday's fixture, and have again requested the fixture to be rescheduled. So it looks like they've actually just been sort of knocked out of the hurling championship now because of that. And like, I sort of, this is a real, real tough one, because, like, on the one hand, like, they were set aside hurling weekend, so I don't know how this is, like, you know, football has come on to the same weekend as hurling in Carlow. Carlow obviously have been out of the hurling championship and the football championship for a long time, so how is it only coming till now, you know, to get this wrapped up? See, part of me always thinks I have a bit of sympathy for the GA because, like, you're trying to manage two sports effectively, and do that like throughout 32 counties. But it seems like, you know, there's been enough time here for Carlo just to try and, you know, get these games out of the way.
100%. Like, from what I could read as well, is that, like, there's only five weekends of the entire year set aside for the
just five
hurling championship. Yeah, from what I could read anyway, I'm not 100% that, not 100% on that, so I don't want to commit to it, but that's what I thought, that it was 5 weekends of the entire year set aside for the senior hurling championship, because there's obviously, like, hurling is quite strong in Carlo, considering that there's not many teams involved. That's it. There's only a handful. I'm not sure the exact number, but it's not a whole lot. So when they have only that number of weekends of the entire year set aside for hurling, and somehow an intermediate football semi-final involving one of the clubs that will be involved in the semi-final, so obviously five players that are going to be involved in the hurling semi-final schedule for the previous evening. So I've no idea how that passed, especially as you said, with Carlo. And Carlo haven't been out of the football and the hurling for that long.
Yeah.
And it must be something to do with the championship structure within Carlo that, you know, maybe takes so many games to get to the knockout stages or the semi-final stages. And then, as happens in a load of different counties, tends to pile up on each other at this time of year. We mentioned Antrim there. You know, just the game we were on about the free kicks on Thursday night. But that's one of numerous examples. I mean, a few that I've seen lately, you mentioned the cooler one as well. I've seen a lot of kind of ladies' examples lately where I think there was another one in Tipperary where players have been asked to, sometimes on the same day, never mind in the same. But what bothers me about this is that it always takes the people involved to raise it as an issue, as opposed to administrators flagging this in the first place. You know, when they're scheduling games, and they say, oh, well, we've got this game on a Saturday and this game on Sunday. Okay, we'll just go ahead. And then it's like, rather than them having already noticed it, it takes the clubs involved to have to flag it and make a big issue of it and actually bring it to light for people like us then to make an issue of it rather than be spotted in the first place. So
yeah.
I'm not coming with a solution. It's just like a real sympathy and support for Ballinkillen, who were affected. The football club were playing the intermediate semi-final there. Kildavin, they're in full support from what I can see as well. Just a lot of the people involved in the club community, and especially the hurling community in Carlo, are fully on their side as well. So it comes back. I mean, we have this conversation this time every year, Conan, and probably different stages throughout the year as well. But that the fact that it can be allowed to keep on going, I don't know what to say at this stage.
Yeah, we have the same conversation basically every month, every year. Like, you know, it goes in cycles.
Like
it goes from club fixtures to rule changes to championship structures to then we get into analysis and fairness for a good chunk of it, which is always a nice relief. But yeah, I don't, like, as you say, 5 weekends, like, you know, if you even start at your championship in August, September, like, you know, whenever Leinster starts in, it's not like it's taking up a big chunk of things. Like, so, like, to impede on one of those, like, you know, minuscule amount of weekends that you've given to hurling is very strange. And I just don't understand, like, you're saying about, like, you didn't have a solution there, but, like, why does it have to be on a Saturday? Why does the game have to be Saturday and Sunday? Why not have one on a Wednesday? Like, people, like, dual players are very resilient. Like, they understand that what they're doing is a big ask. Like, you know, and that's why, as you say, it's only when a club flags something or a player flags something that we start talking about it. But for the most part, all over Ireland, county, colleges, whatever, like, they all just get on with it, and it's really bloody tough. But I remember club Swatra in Derry, they won the intermediate football and the senior hurling championship. This was about 6-7 years ago. And they went in the intermediate semi-final, the football semi-final, went to a replay, and they played the replay on the Wednesday night and then had the hurling final on the Sunday. And there wasn't, like, you know, any outcry about that. That was just them thinking, well, you know, we drew the semi-finals, we have to play the replay now, and we'll get ready for the final. You know, and they were just sort of managing it themselves. I just don't understand how you get to this situation. Like, obviously, if their football game had been on a Saturday and they're supposed to play a final on a Sunday, then it would have been much worse. Like, surely there's common sense. They offer them the Wednesday at least, like, you know, and see how that goes.
I just on that, I can't speak for the personal situations of the people involved, but I know that, like, let's say that happened in I think it was either 2016 or 2017. It was the year that Mayo would have been involved in the All Ireland final, probably 2016, because that year went to a replay, so push back club games in Mayo a bit further. But obviously Mayo is further away from Dublin, let's say, than Carlo, but games were played on, replays were played on the Wednesday night, on Wednesday nights that year. But it was really at a stretch because, sure, I speak for my own situation, but like for me to have to get down from Dublin to Mayo during the week, you know, have, if you're in college or you're working in Dublin. So like, I don't know about their proximity to Dublin or the personal situations where they're based, but I imagine that came into it. But like, if it's an option, absolutely provide it.
Yeah.
You know, but if not, that surely there's enough time or enough space in the calendar from the time that Carlo are out of both championships to prevent a situation like this from happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And from too many games to too little games, Ballymun. So Ballymun are out of the Dublin Senior Football Championship at the group stages. So big shock, I suppose. Everyone's always thinking about Ballymun because it wasn't that long ago they were in the...
You called it, Conor, not for you.
I did. Jeez, I had a good day on Thursday, didn't I? I called David Fitzgerald and I called Nafina to beat Ballymun. They did 5 points. Although I did say it would be a good game. It was pretty bloody boring. But I do have sympathy for Ballymun. Again, we talked about this and the players trying to integrate them back into the team, and they do it very quickly. I went back to an old GAR episode where Paddy Christie was on. He managed Ballymun in 2017 when he got to the final, lost to Vincent's. And he said, I thought it was very difficult year to keep everything going. You were tight on numbers during the year, and then the lads came back having won in All-Ireland. It was difficult to reintegrate them. The pattern of play that you had all year has changed, so I think that has a big effect on things. From my point of view, it's nearly an impossible situation. And like Ballymun, they're like, you know, they're being punished for service in Dublin so well, and they have six players in the panel at the minute, usually seven. Like, Davy Byrne's been there for so many years. And it's not just any players. Like, obviously, a lot of teams have a county player, and you can bring him in. Like, you know, it's usually your star players, so you can bring him in, and it's going to work. But here, like, you have a keeper, Evan Comerford. You have Philly McMahon, who's played midfield, centre back, and fullback for them. Played fullback against Nafina. So your keeper, fullback, John Small, centre back, James McCarthy, midfield. Davy Byrne obviously mentioned, but he'd be half forward. Paddy Small, who played off the full forward line, and Dean Rock in the full forward line. So every single line of the pitch is, like, you know, has a county player in it, and it's obviously your main player, and that's going from like your spine, your keeper. So you can't even work on any of these things during the year, and then you get them 2 weeks out from championship, and it's like, right, I hope we can get this together. They play Nafina in a must-win game.
Yeah. You can't even have a distinguishable. Style of play, because obviously when you have seven players of that caliber coming back in, it's going to be dictated by those players. Do you know what I mean? You could work on something all year that you want your style of play to be, but you have to adapt to what the likes of James McCarthy, Philip McMahon, the Smalls, Dean Rock are going to bring back. So there's every chance that Ballymun are playing a completely different way in the league, let's say, to how they are playing in the championship, and they're faced with a must-win game against Nafina. The lads would have only been with Ballymun for one game, correct me if I'm wrong, before Dublin were in the championship, and then maybe two games, and then they had to completely adapt maybe 2-3 weeks after winning the All-Ireland and everything that comes with that, to try and, as you said, must-win game in Parnell Park on Friday night. So I was looking back, actually, the year that the 1 year that Ballymun got to the club final, which was 2013, so they would have won the Dublin County in 2012. And that was so Dublin haven't won it 2 years since 2011, and 2012 was they got knocked out of the semi-final against Mayo. I don't think it's a coincidence that year they went on to have their best year, getting all the way to the All-Ireland Cup final, which they really should have won. You know, haven't got off to such a good start against Bridges that year too. So it seems like if you were to look at any club teams around the country on paper, Ballymun are probably going to be close to the top of the list, if not top of the list, because of all those county lads. But if you look at the rest of the clubs that are up there, the likes of Carfin, like there's been an argument about Carfin for a long time that there should be more Carfin players playing for Galway, because the only, in recent years, after Gary Sykes stepped down, the only guarantee was Ian Burke. And now this year you've had Kieran Malloy, Martin Farrer, and maybe Bernard Power and goals, but they're not dead certs. Whereas all the dead certs for, you know, all the Ballymun players are nearly dead certs for Dublin. Same goes for, like, Cross McGinn for years. They were saying that there should be more players on the Armagh team. St. Vincent's had Jeremy Connolly. Outside of that, you know, maybe one or two here or there. But none of the top teams, maybe Dr. Crokes in Killarney, I think they're maybe a different kind of kettle of fish because of the structure of the club competition in Kerry maybe allows time for them to adapt and come back in. But I don't think there's any of the top teams in football in recent years anyway that have, you know, been dominated, you know, that their core has been dominated to with county players to the extent that the Ballymun has. And the sad thing for them is that, like, it's likely going to continue like this for as long as those players are involved at Ballymun, because Dublin are going to continue to be successful. So Ballymun could potentially look back on what is their golden generation. You know, they're never likely to have, you know, 6 or 7 players of that calibre again. And all they might have to show for it is maybe a county final.
Yeah. And obviously, like, I'm sure they take a lot of pride in the fact they're playing for Dublin, but it's just such
course,
a shame
yeah.
that you have all these players that don't. Yeah, like, it's funny you mentioned, like, Cora Finn and stuff there in Crossmaglen. It's almost about who gets to use them first. Like, so if you listen to Tony Brosnan
yeah.
and, like, Kieran Malloy said it before as well, that they are affected, like, their chances of playing counties affected by how well the club's doing. So Tony Brosnan doesn't really get a look in because he's with Crooks all year, and the same with Cora Finn. But here, it's the other way around. It's like you don't get to play with the club because you're playing with the county.
Yeah.
So, like, imagine these boys had have all been playing with Ballymun. They won all their titles. You know, like, this has happened from the start of their career. There might be some of them not dominating with Dublin now because they wouldn't be coming back to Dublin until April.
Yeah.
Do you know? So it's just a funny one, like, to see who gets to use them first. But because Ballymun weren't winning when they first came in, they got into the Dublin setup. Obviously, they're all Dublin standard, but yeah, they probably would have got called up anyway, and then Ballymun would have had the heart ripped out of them.
Yeah, and the thing that's unfair on sorry to interrupt there, but the thing that's unfair on the likes of Tony Brosnan, there's been countless examples of this for years as well, is that by the time they get the chance to make any sort of impression, so, you know, occasionally club players go in during the league, but often, oftentimes, if they get to a club final, they're not going back in with the county till April, by which stage everybody else has been training for probably 4 to 5 months and had a chance to make a really good impression in the league. So, you know, you have to really make the most of, unless you're an established player like the Gooch was, let's say, or even Gavin White now for Crokes, but the likes of Tony Brosnan had to make an instant impact. And if they didn't make it an instant impact, they weren't going to be involved with the county. And they were only paying the price for their success at club level. So at least that'll be addressed in some ways with the changing of the club calendar until December. But you mentioned the other way around. I mean, it's tough on Ballymun, I suppose. It's probably going to be that way for the foreseeable as well.
Yeah, that's it. Well, next up, Wooly is chatting to new Kildare manager and Kerry legend Jack O'Connor.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Moore's here for both.
We party in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I'll tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Okay, so delighted to say new Kildare manager Jack O'Connor joins us on the line now. Welcome to the Leinster Championship, Jack.
Yeah, thanks, Colin. Looking forward to it.
Come here, talk to me about how much persuasion was taken to bring you up this part of the world.
I just came out of the blue, to be honest with you, Colin. It wasn't something I was planning. I just retired from teaching in May there, last was 30-something years. And I was planning on taking it handy for a year, maybe going off doing a few things that I hadn't done before. So I kind of came out of the blue, and I just thought about it for a few days and said I'd have a go at it because, you know, I have connections up there. My two lads are up in Kildare, and they play with the Murphy Club there in Newbridge.
Yeah.
So I've been up and down for the last 3 or 4 years. So it isn't as if it is completely new to me. You know, I have a good idea of the club scene up there and worked a little bit with Ross Davin, with Murphy's. So I just thought it was a good pick because, you know, it's the first time, I suppose, that I was in a position to do something like this because, you know, if I was working full-time in Kerry, it wouldn't be a runner.
Yeah, no, so you're going to drive up and down. Like, I mean, you're not going to base yourself in Kildare or anything like that.
Well, we'll see. Sure, I might stay an odd night, but I feel that I'd be able to commute up and down, yeah, because... You know, the roads are decent now, especially, you know, from Limerick on. So it's not too bad. I think I'll be okay. It depends on basically on traffic and what hour of the day or night that you're travelling. It's not too bad of a spin if you're travelling and the traffic isn't too heavy, you know.
Yeah, no, it won't be too. Listen, it worked for Mick O'Dwyer, so listen, it's not without precedent driving up and down to Kildare.
Yeah. Well, it's roughly the same spin for me. I'd say it's give or take 200 miles from Mayes to St. Finan's Bay, where I live, back between Ballinasgillies and Fort McGee on the coast there. So it's a good spin, but it's doable. You know, I have the time, at least I have the time now, and I still have the energy to do it, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I'm sure Mikko's name has been brought up to you plenty of times since you took the job. He's the last All-Ireland winning Kerry manager to take over Kildare.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. He created a big stir up there at the time, and a lot of adapted Kerry supporters started supporting Kildare, you know, because they delighted Mikko. So I could create half the stir that he created, sure, we wouldn't be doing too bad then.
Yeah, that's the thing. And he did really create a stir because, like, I mean, the support Kildare had back in those days was, like, fanatical. And, like, I mean, it was almost a little bit like Mayo. And that's fallen off for whatever reason, Jack. You know, I'm sure you're aware, like, the support hasn't been there. So maybe creating that stir is important again.
Well, absolutely. You know, the players feed off the supporters and vice versa. And so I suppose our first job is to try and give the supporters something to shout about and hopefully make the team attractive to follow and to watch. And that's our first priority. And if people follow each other, it's a bit like the, you know, I was in Newbridge there a couple of years ago when that famous game with Mayo was there, and there didn't seem to be anything wrong with Kildare supporters that evening anyway, that's for sure. You know, so the support base is there, I feel, and it's a good footballing county. So it's just a matter of trying to get back winning and creating, you know, a bit of interest again among the supporters.
Yeah, you mentioned how familiar you are with Kildare club football with your two young fellas playing with Moorfield. Would you have seen a lot? Would you know, like, will you have to hold trials now, or you think you're on top of it from seeing a lot of club games over the last few years?
The two lads that I bring in with me, Ross Clavin and Tom Cribben,
yeah,
would be very familiar with the club scene, you know. I'd be relying on them quite a lot, but you know, I'd have seen the majority of the players because Moorfield have been involved at the, you know, in the latter stages of the championship for the last two or three years, and I've been at all those games, so I'd have come across a lot of the players. Obviously, there'd be some players with intermediate clubs and that I wouldn't have seen, though. I'd be, you know, depending on the lads to give me the heads up on that.
Yeah, your last year managing at intercounty level was 2009 at senior level. You obviously staying involved. Obviously, you won All Ireland's with the minors, and you've been with the under 21s. Have you noticed a big difference in managerial setups and backroom teams? Like, I mean, I see you have Tom Cribben and Ross Glavin. Like you said, you'll probably have to make a few more appointments to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah, well, I was involved until 2012.
Were you?
2009 was the last.
The last All-Ireland win, yeah.
I've kept my eye in since. I've been involved with the minors in 14 and 15 and with the 21s and 20 since. But you're right, it's a different level and size of backroom teams. I mean, all you have to do is listen to the Tipperary captain there. And he was given his acceptance speech there.
Sammy Callan,
spent a long time talking about the different guys in the backroom. So, yeah, it has. But look, you know, and players kind of demand that now. You know, it's not a case that you can wind back the clock. I think, you know, players are, I think Dylan McGrath at the point that, you know, most players now are going to third level and they're comparing notes with what the other counties are doing. So you can't get away back the clock. That's a given now that you have to have a big backroom team. But I mean, the fundamentals still don't change. It's a matter of getting the team fit and picking the right players and gelling them, you know, as a team and getting the right information during the match and post-match on how certain players are performing. So look, the fundamentals don't change too much, and it doesn't matter what size your backroom team is, it's the way you use the information that you're given, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Have you spoken to the players yet? Like, I mean, the big talk of Kildare this year was players obviously not committing. Daniel Flynn is the big one. I know he was at home this year playing. He'd gone away and came back, but didn't commit. Niall Kelly obviously went away, came back. Are you playing with a full deck? Are the injury, then there was the terrible injury situation that they had this year as well. Is it looking positive from a point of view that you'll have everybody involved?
Look, I've spoken to some players, and players I've spoken to are very enthusiastic and mad for road. So, you know, I'd be hoping to have pretty much a full deck. I think there might be one or two players that have committed to going travelling for a year or for some few months. So that may still happen. But by and large, you know, the players I've spoken to are very enthusiastic and want to get going and want to, you know, have a real go at it next year.
Yeah. Kildare are rivals of Laois, but have no problem saying it's a great job, Jack. It's a great, they've great potential. They're a Super 8 team. You know, they were a Super 8 team last year, and they've got big, physical, strong players. You know, they've scorers. They've a dominating midfield if you want it. You know, it was an attractive job, I'm sure, when you were approached for it.
Yeah, absolutely, Colm. I mean, look, I don't think it's any secret that, you know, since I left the Kerry set up, I've got a few offers from outside counties previously, but I wasn't in a position to take those offers seriously because I was still teaching full time in Kerry, and it's just not doable to leave Kerry at 5 o'clock in the evening and train wherever at 7:30 that night. It's just not doable.
Yeah.
So it was the first time that I was in a position to accept a job like this, and just so happened that it was Kildare. And I must say that the fact that I had connections up there, my two boys are up, and I go up there quite a lot anyway. And you know, I'd be watching them playing anyway. So and doing a little bit with the club up there. So from that point of view, it was. And I know how much, you know, passion there is for football in Kildare, and fierce interest in it. So, you know, absolutely, I see this as an attractive proposition. And the key is that, you know, I think there's improvement in them. You know, they're really and truly, Kildare should be a solid Division 1 team and should be competing for the Super 8 virtually every year. You know, I agree with you there.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. What about the style of play? Because in fairness, Kildare, you had a style of play with Kerry, which is a traditional Kerry style of play, you know, kicking, catching, that kind of thing. And Kildare wouldn't be 100 miles away from that in the last couple of years. And the trend now in Gaelic football, maybe you got out at the right time, Jack, in 2012, where you missed all this awful hand-passing games we had. And it seems to be moving back again towards more catching and kicking football.
Yeah, well, I think the realization has dawned on people that you know, that very defensive style only gets you so far. You know, I remember being down at Killarney at the National League game, the first game of the year this year, watching the young Kerry team taking on Tyrone, and I couldn't understand for why Tyrone, for love or money, wouldn't kick the ball. I actually met Peter Canavan up in the hotel in the Marlton afterwards. He was there with his young son, because his other son came on as a sub for Tyrone.
Yeah.
And I was saying, Jesus, Peter, why isn't they kicking the ball? Like, and he was shaking his head as well, that they were just trying to work with him. Kerry were getting bodies back, and it was going nowhere. And lo and behold, as the year went on, Tyrone realised that, you know, they have to go that way, so they put a big target man in, pull forward in McShane and at times Matty Donnelly. So it is a more effective style of football, and I think that's dawning on managers and coaches around the country. And you know, I mean, I know, so it's Fado, but you know, you saw what the likes of Johnny Crowley and Kieran Donaghy did for us back in the days, you know. And in many ways, I think it's gone full circle, that if you, there's still room for a target man in the full forward line, if you can get the quality of ball in there. And it's not a matter of, you know, you have to be refined and can't be just hoofing it from everywhere. But there is, of course, you can mix it. I mean, you don't have to be a slave to it, but it is a fantastic option if you can have that kind of a man. He's a diagonal ball from 45, 50 yards and he can bring other players into it. So, what we'd be trying to do is find that target man or two and get other guys, helping out in different facets.
Yeah, in and around him as well. And of course, there's an offensive mark which could easily be in the championship next year. It was trialled during the league this year. I'm sure that'll be voted on, I'm pretty sure, at the next Congress. So that could be in for next year's league and championship.
Yeah, it could be, and it would certainly encourage that kind of kicking. And you saw how effective Tommy was for Kerry in the league. And that certainly is something that would make the footpath more prevalent. You know.
Yeah. So do you do most of the coaching yourself, Jack, or does Ross do a little bit of the coaching? I'm not sure.
I like coaching myself, but. But I realise as manager that you have to share it around a bit, you know. So
Tom's well able to do it too.
And Tom too, yeah. So, you know, the days of selector spending around, you know, matching training is long gone. So the way training anyway is divided nowadays, Colin, you break the group up into different sectors and you might have stuff going on in two or three different station, so there'll be plenty for everyone to do, you know.
Yeah, no, there will. Come here, I meant to ask you about the under-20s, and obviously Kerry won the 5 in a row minor, and a lot of their best players went straight to senior and missed the under-20s. Like, I'm completely against that. I think it makes a farce of the under-20 competition. Just wondering what your opinion is on it after managing for 2 years at under-20.
I suppose I'm probably in a better position to comment on it than anyone, because I lost out on David Clifford and last year on Shawnee Shade. You know, the two, not alone are the two best under 20 forwards in the country, they're now probably two of the best senior forwards in the country. So, and we were beaten in the semi final by a point. So you can imagine how frustrated I was after that game. You know, so look. I'd sum it up like this. I mean, how can you take a competition seriously when the best players aren't allowed to play in it? That's the way you look at it, you know.
Yeah.
And it really takes from the competition that someone like David Clifford couldn't play in it. That's the be all and end all of that sort of thing.
And that's it. And I was using the example recently on the show here that Laois beat Meath in the under 21 in Leinster, and it was just so happened that the date fell on the week after Laois were knocked out of the senior championship, so they got their senior lads back, and Meath were still in it, so they were down their seniors. Do you know what I mean? There's a completely unfair situation that game fell at a time.
Yeah, absolutely, and if you leave something kind of to the goodwill of, you know, of the people involved with the senior team, then that's not really a good way to run it. I mean, for example, this year we lost another good player, Dermot O'Connor, who featured with Kerry in the league but isn't featuring now in the championship. Whereas Cork, it was well known that Cork had 3 or 4 or 5 players that the seniors were looking at, but they stuck with the 20s, and
right.
You know, fair play to them. It came right for them, and they won the under 20 championship. So I mean, look, it's just a farce of a setup where some counties can have their players and other counties don't have them, and it's an uneven playing field then. And you know, I was just, I suppose, a bit unlucky that the people that I, the lads that I was denied were just absolutely exceptional players, you know?
Yeah, the top class players. Just to finish up there, you're going to have the same issue, I'd say, with Kildare then, because they've won 3 of the last 5 minor titles, so they've got great, and they've been beating Dublin in them as well, which is important, and they won the All-Ireland under 20 obviously in 2018, so you're going to have that balancing act with some good young lads coming up through the ranks as well.
Yeah, but long term, Colm, I can't see that under 20 competition surviving. You know, I'll be honest with you, if it was up to me, I just have the one competition, I'd have an under 19 competition, because I think the minors are too young to be playing in front of the crowds they're playing in front. You know, they're still only developing and still physically not able for, you know, the rigors of that hard inter-county training. So I think possibly an under 19 competition, and all players should be available at that age group, and you know, once they're over 19, then you know, if they're ready for senior, then so be it. But I think that's the way long term it would have to go, because certainly the under 20 competition hasn't been satisfactory up to now.
No. Finally, you mentioned the Super 8s is a definite target for you. I presume breaking Dublin's stranglehold on the Leinster Championship, while it's difficult, they've won 14 out of 15. So, like, I mean, someone's going to have to do it sometime, as like my father said, but, it, you know, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, look, we won't be making any sweeping promises or whatever. We'll just be trying to take it bit by bit and try and build a good squad and a competitive squad and then a cohesive team and a cohesive unit. So, of course, we'd love to, you know, try and get back into Division 1, and because you really have to be competing in Division 1 to think seriously to making a big impact in the Championship, because that's really where it's at. You know, it's very, very hard to see anyone making a breakthrough outside of Division 1. So we'll take it one step at a time, and we'll try and have them to walk before we run, Colin.
Jack, thanks very much for taking the call.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Colin. Bye-bye.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Performance of the weekend. So a lot of club action going on over the weekend, and straight away I have down here Sean Elliott from Dunloy. So massive win for Dunloy. I told you to watch it. Gee, I really was having a good day on Thursday.
You were on but fire last Thursday.
No, yeah, obviously it's not a big call to say watch the Antrim Hurdon final, but Dunloy cushioned all. It was a packed house in Ballycastle. Nice autumn day for it, you know, a little crisp in the air, and Sean Elliott came off the bench with 20 minutes to go and scored two goals for his club as Dunloy sort of ousted their rivals Cushion Doll. So massive performance from him, and one of the goals that was laid on, there was a point in it and it just went end to end from the keeper to catch and the whole way down the end of the pitch, and the crowd were loving it. There's kids behind the goal sort of sprinting towards it. It's just brilliant scenes, proper club scenes, and brilliant win for Dunloy. For Cushion Doll at the other side, obviously a hard day for them, but Neil McManus, nobody would be surprised, had a massive, massive performance. He scored 10 points for them. One of them, he literally ran over the top of somebody. It was like Peter Duggan-esque for Clare. It was close control. He was under a lot of pressure and then just bulldozed someone to the ground and popped it over, sort of improvised strike. It was a great, great point for him. More Hurling, believe it or not. Rian Considine and Crat Lowe, the Clare senior quarterfinals. He scored 2-3. He's only 20 and he scored 2-3 in a senior quarterfinal. And one of the goals was one of the most delicious things I've ever seen. So the ball was coming down the right wing and it got put in on top of the goalkeeper, basically. Just sort of towards the left of the post as you're looking from the right. And the keeper and the fullback sort of didn't know who was going to go for it. And Rian just comes across with his hurl. Unbelievable first touch. Pucks it away from the two of them, catches it before it hits the ground with the hurl, pops it up to his hands, and instead of drilling it into the net, sees the fullback coming across him and just dummies him and puts it in under the keeper, who has recovered. So it was amazing skill and like just class composure then when he was under a bit of pressure.
Second touch was brilliant as well. He was going at about 100 miles an hour, so
yeah,
really, really, really cool.
It was only when he slowed it down, it was like Jesus, like how has he done all that in that space of time? Like, yeah, as you say, 100 miles an hour, and the whole thing happened in about 1.5 seconds. You know,
yeah,
it was
yeah.
brilliant stick work. Up in Donegal, Owen McGeachin scored a hat trick for St Unans. One of them was just this class. Had Ashley McConville raving on commentary. Cut inside on his left foot and just for the instep, drills it into the top left corner. And I think that's the most difficult thing to do in football, that instep across the goals into the top corner.
With power, though. It was like, he caressed it with power, if that makes any sense. It was nearly like a proper R2 or L2 finish on FIFA. Yeah. But it was his second goal as well. I think he's only a young fella, but it was real quality.
Yeah, it was L2 off the left. Yeah, but that's a perfect description of it. You were watching the Kilcar game.
Yeah, I saw a good bit of the Kilcar game on Saturday night. Andrew McLean got man of the match. He was really good, really lively. He got a goal and a point, took it very well. And to stand out in the team with Owen Ryan and Mark McHugh all playing, Stephen and Paddy McBurty as well, that takes a lot of doing. But I wanted to give mention to Michael Hegarty.
Still going.
I think they said he was playing in his first championship season was 96. I think he did in like his 24th championship season.
Mm.
So he'd been meant to start. He was wearing 6. But I think he was an injury doubt. So he only came on with about maybe 20 minutes to go. And at this stage, Killy Beggs were really coming back into it. And it was largely down to Hugh McFadden, who was threatening to win the game on his own for about 15 minutes. Had a real big purple patch. And then he kind of guys seemed to get a bit of an injury. And after his injury, he went in on the edge of the square. But then kind of Kilcar started to dominate out the pitch. And one of the reasons for that was Michael Hegarty, because he just calmed everything down completely. He just played, nearly just slowed the game down to his own pace and dictated everything from as soon as he came on. So to do that at his age was really good. But Andrew McLean, yeah, really deserving of the man of the match. Looking forward to seeing this, because this Kilcar team obviously got far in Ulster a couple of years ago. And like we've seen from Guido and a few others, the quality of Donegal club football. So I'm looking forward to seeing them again now.
Yeah, Guido had the fright of their lives against Bundoran, had to drag it out in extra time after blowing an 8-point lead, I think it was, up there. But Owen McHugh obviously doesn't really care about four steps. He took about 13 for Paddy McBurty's goal. But it was because when he first picked it up, he was running away from goals and slipped. So maybe the referee thought he had some sort of play on the ball there. He slipped, got back up and just ran around the marker and eventually took a solo and popped it into to McBurty, who finished like a coach's dream, just drilled it into the bottom corner. But who else? Was there somebody else in Donegal? No, actually, you're talking about Michael Hegarty, the timeless gems, Ollie Canning. He was also playing, 43 years of age, playing with Port Tumna. It's a 26th season of senior hurling, 26 years, and he scored 2 points for Port Tumna, and apparently won 2 frees there as well in a relegation playoff that kept them up. And not only that, it relegated Gort, who were one of the favourites to win the whole championship, and they're away down now to senior B. And Ollie Canning, 43 years of age, still going strong.
Amazing. You're thinking of retiring, and then you see Ali Canning and Michael Hegarty playing well into their 40s. He's making it in the last week at 57. It's like, oh God.
and then another one, Paddy Cunningham. So back up in Antrim, just like an exhibition from him. Like, he just doesn't look like he's ever going to lose his accuracy. One of them was Conor Cox-esque, but I'd say, you know, Conor Cox is just more Paddy Cunningham-esque. They give him a man his due. Yeah. So he was down the left, and he's inside the 13, he's on the wing, and he dummies, like, it looks like he's about to come back out onto his right, and instead he goes further back onto his left and hits it with the outside of his boot, and it just curves over. The umpires can't believe it, the crowd can't believe it, and it is one of those ones, you know, where you hear the coaches shout, recycle, recycle, don't bloody shit, ah, good score, boy, and, you know, nobody cares, and they're just all delighted that the ball went over, and that's it. Paddy Cunningham just does whatever the hell he wants with the ball.
Yeah, certain people can get away with it. They're allowed not recycle. Like, Paddy Cunningham is one of them. It reminded me of Stephen O'Neill, and I think that's I think whatever about Conor Cox, you can definitely, to compare anyone to Stephen O'Neill is a compliment. There's only a few that could be that Stephen O'Neill would do a dummy, and you have to call it somebody else esque. So that's the highest compliment I could.
Yeah, definitely. So the winner, it's a tough one. I don't know whether to go with an old lad or a young lad, but I think I'm going to go with Rian Considine of Cratlow, just for scoring 2-3 at the age of 20 in a Clare senior quarterfinal, and one of the goals, unbelievable, carry on. So Rian, congratulations, you are the Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend. Connor, thanks very much for joining me. That is all we have time for. We are back on Thursday, so we'll see you then.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance of goal, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, I'm heartbroken. I let it go. See you later.